Blessed are the young, for they shall inherit the national debt. That's one of my favorite quotes when it comes to this ever so present phenomenon in most modern economies. Today, we'll be covering a topic that is endemic in the sense that as far back as you can go, ever since independence, there's always been talk of national debt in one form or another, and no country in the world is exempt of this. We thought for today, we'd cover it since, as the quote stated, we as young people are going to inherit this national debt that is being racked up right now. I'm joined today by my co-host, Abraham and Arkad. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Market Meter Podcast. So on July 10th this year, the National Treasury released Kenya's 2021-2022 national budget estimate. I'll call it an estimate because rarely do you find situations where we actually get to meet whatever has been budgeted. And that's the essence of a budget in itself, in that it's not, it doesn't necessarily have to come true, but it's a reflection of what is expected. In this survey that is released every year, it was highlighted that the total budget estimate for this financial year, which is 2021-2022, will be 3 trillion shillings. That's a 4.8% increase from last year's budget, which came in at 2.9 trillion shillings. The government also projects that the total revenue will increase by 10.3% to 2 trillion from 1.8 trillion. And understandably so, because considering the last financial year, we had COVID and with the economy shutting down, of course, there are obvious revenue shortfalls arising from that. If you look at our total national debt, as of June this year, it stood at 7.7 trillion shillings. And of that 7.7 trillion, 3.7 trillion is domestic debt, while the rest is foreign debt. One metric that is used to judge how sustainable our levels of debt are is the debt to GDP ratio, which stood at 69% before August. And then in August, it was decided that our GDP was going to be rebased. Rebasing basically implies that our debt levels, for example, used to be compared to our GDP levels in 2009. And based on that, we had a debt to GDP ratio of 69%. But after rebasing the GDP based on 2016's GDP, I came that we have a debt to GDP ratio of 67.5. So, and that actually is still higher than the IMF recommended level of 50%. So as much as people might have speculated that rebasing the GDP was solely as a ploy to reduce our debt to GDP ratio, 2% is not that big of a change. Although it's a change, the rate is still higher than the level recommended by the IMF. We'll be sharing more statistics as far as our national debt is concerned as we go along during the episode. But as of now, I would like my co-host to start by just giving the general outlook of our debt or of our public debt situation as it stands now. Rekad?
Well, for me, I'll say that that's a very critical topic that you've expounded on in terms of debt and its implications in our markets. But one thing most people don't understand is that it affects our day-to-day living by the fact that people don't understand why the prices of fuel are going up, prices of bread and other commodities are going up. They don't really understand the implications of debt and its impact on inflation in totality. Because if we could start by, so when prices of fuel have gone up because of the OPEC's in terms of their, how can I put it? I don't want to call them like a cartel, but they usually seem to operate through such means because they're like a combination of countries that price the fuel and everything. Then we have our own Kenyan fuel, of which in social media, they're now terming it as Mafuta Kujipaka. So we try to understand, is it fuel we have in Kenya? Is it oil for applying to our bodies? Or is it oil that can be used in machineries? Because it has never helped us up to date. But in terms of our credit perspective, the IMF demands that we need to set up our measures in terms of raising the price of commodities so that we can meet the interest payments. Our interest payments was actually deferred in terms of China. They gave us some period that whereby we cannot pay them. But if they are default, they might end up taking some of our country's assets. So if you do a cross analysis, look at the Chinese documents, they have it all printed out for the world to read. So in terms of our debt, we do expect that our currency will go down in terms of valuation purposes and the purchasing power of it. The dollar will also go down in terms of raising the debt ceiling in their country. So we do expect people to hedge their finances in terms of where they should put their money and where they should be more productive in terms of gaining value.
Yeah, man, I mean, I don't want to get too political, but hey, Bana, since Jubilee came in, it's been a crazy turn of events in terms of how the government is financing itself, financing its projects, and the debt that it has taken over the years. I really can't add much to what Rekad has said, because you've captured it quite astutely, but I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if we're going to eliminate the debt ceiling so that we can probably just pay back some of this cash. I mean, it was just poor management, poor financial management, poor economic management. And I hate to say it because I'm not really an economics expert, but it's quite obvious. And you've talked about the fuel prices. We're seeing how taxes are being introduced every other day, Bana. KRA even wants to, is it minimum tax? So is it minimum tax for businesses that was declared unconstitutional just the other day? Because surely, what do you want to tax guys? Why do you want to tax guys who've not even made a profit? Well, it's due the story of taxing people. Is it 21 and above? I'm not quite conversant with that proposed law and the likes. But looking at all those dynamics, it's been a crazy situation. The Kenya shilling is weakening against the dollar, so you know what that means again for how much you're going to pay back. Because I think even the SGR, I think we're paying back in dollars, if I'm not wrong. And that adds pressure, of course, to the government. It adds to already a dire situation. So just speaking about it is making me feel so emotional, because I don't understand how we could get into such a mess. And I mean, the previous regime of Kibaki, I mean, it wasn't a perfect government, but at least on that economic front, debt management was clearly a priority for them. In fact, I don't know who thought about it, who spoke about it, that even when the shilling slid against the dollar even slightly, Kibaki would summon the minister for, those days was minister for finance, and also these guys were in charge of the imports and exports. He would summon them to State House, and you'd ask them, why has this happened? I don't know if that has been happening, you know, that sort of scrutiny of our financial situation. So yeah, that's just my take on it. Maybe Suri, you can just give your 2 cents on the same.
Yeah, I think both of you brought up very valid points, especially as far as the national debt not being separate from our day-to-day activities and our purchases and basically our day-to-day lives. Because Kenyans only get to complain when that lack of, you know, fiscal discipline shows up in form of higher taxes or higher commodity prices. You know, Kenyans don't hit the streets until you see maybe the prices of flour have hit a certain price. They're like, enough is enough. But when the, you know, when the MPs and the government in general is suggesting all these pricey, you know, projects that we can barely afford on whatever we're making from our revenue collection, everyone is clapping. But when it shows up on the expenditure, that's where they draw the line. But the two things are connected. They're connected at the hip. So when you see such regressive taxes, like Abraham has mentioned, the minimum tax, first of all, that's just anti-capitalist in itself. Because how can a loss-making business be expected to file for taxes? That means you're taxing capital. Because at that point, if someone is making losses, it means they're eating into their own capital. And then the government is like, hey, I see you're eating into your capital. I also want a cut of your capital. That's anti-capitalist in itself. It's killing off small businesses that are just starting out, that are trying to figure things out. Because Most startups, okay, let's not even go to startups. The startup space, as much as it's growing, it makes up a very small part of our economy as Kenya. If you look at small businesses, when you're starting out, you're still figuring out the systems, you're figuring out who your suppliers are, and you're trying to figure out how to do business well. So it's assured that once you start a business, you're not going to be profitable immediately. Now imagine the government coming in and telling you, hey, on top of that worry of you figuring out how to survive in these tough times, we also want a cut of your capital, just because we can't wait. We can't sit around waiting for you to make money. We want your money now. And I think it's perverse in itself. The first time I heard it, I literally threw up in my head, at least, because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Any economist who's worth their weight in gold or in whatever, even in iron, will tell you that that's a bad idea. That's anti-capitalist in itself. Yeah. Let's get back to the statistics. I'm a statistics guy. So if based on financial year 2020-2021, if you compare our total debt service to our revenue, it's estimated that 43% of the revenue that we pay, it goes into debt servicing. 43%. So for every 100 shillings you pay in taxes, 43 shillings goes into servicing debt. And you have to remember, this number is not static. Like, the debt itself is growing year by year by year. Like, if you look at the compounded average growth rate of our budget since 2011, it's 12.3%. So on average, on a financial year by financial year basis, our budget is growing by 12.3%. We came from a position where in 2012, we had a budget of 0.9 trillion shillings. But now, based on what was the budget that was released by the Treasury in June, we have a budget of 3 trillion shillings. You don't have to be an economist to realize that sooner or later, this is going to come home to roost. If you look at the debt ceiling, our nominal debt ceiling stands at around 9.9 trillion, the current standing one. And Treasury itself estimates that the threshold is going to be broken, it's said to be broken in financial year 2022-2023. So next year, they expected the debt ceiling to be breached next year. You'll never, I assure you, given the kind of rhetoric we see from our political class, you'll never get a politician coming to office and saying, hey, we want fiscal discipline. No, everyone wants big buildings, they want big projects all over the place. It does not matter, as long as you're making all these promises on the campaign trail, there's no planning, there's nothing. You just make a promise and you try as much to, you know, get as much debt for us to be able to complete these projects. We're never going to have fiscal discipline. I know that's a pessimist kind of view, but given the kind of rhetoric that is necessary to sway the Kenyan voter, we're never going to have that, because the Kenyan voter wants hope. They want stories. They don't care about paying back debt. They don't care about the debt that, you know, they're putting on their kids. No, as long as you're making me promises, I'll argue with you when it comes, when you maybe increase the price of unga, or I see the price of bread going higher. But if it doesn't show up in my staple goods, you can spend all you want. We're not going to hold you accountable in any way. And I think it's completely asinine. I don't want to go further into this, because as you can tell, I'm already getting emotional about the whole thing. So, Rikard, I have a question. So, given the trend that we've been seeing here, and I think I had a conversation with you earlier, we were talking about the debt ceiling in the US being raised, I don't know, 38 times since 78 times since the first ever debt ceiling was set. 78 times. So, do you see the same thing playing out in Kenya? Do you see, or basically, what's your outlook on the Kenya as far as our fiscal situation is concerned?
Well, with regards to my own opinion, for starters, there's this IFB 2021 going around, whereby it's a 21-year bond that people are buying, in that it offers a 12.7% interest rate. 12.73, if I may be exact. Maybe at the 3 at the end, to be exact. So, if I was an investor, for starters, I wouldn't buy it, because what is the Kenyan government doing with that infrastructure bond? clearly you can't see anything that will generate value based on that money that they are selling to Kenyans, either in the primary market or currently in the secondary market. So that's personally my own opinion. I won't buy it. But if you look at the inflation rate and everything, people get like half year more than 6% at the end of the year, coupon payments and all that. But if you look at it in totality, what's the risk that are involved? Can our country default on it? Yes, it's possible, given our level of debt and interest payments that we need to make to the IMF, the World Bank, and the Chinese government. So I'd say it's not the best investment to do. So we still, the good thing is we still have room to lower our interest rates, which is not good for savers, but it's good for investors, in that you can borrow, pay a lower interest, you can save, then get a low interest rate. So it's a two-edged sword. People will gain, others will lose. So people in the stock market will gain more if the interest rates go lower or if they inflate our currency. So it's better to be placed more in the commodities markets or placed in the equities perspective. So that's where I would hide my money rather than buy the infrastructure bond currently in terms of the Kenyan market perspective.
I have something to chip in as far as that is concerned, because when you're rebasing the GDP, the governor of the central bank said something. Dr. Njoroge said something that I found very interesting. And I quote, "From independence, every single shilling that we owe our creditors has been paid through our own resources." That's a bit of a reach. Anyway, continuing. "We have no write-offs like Uganda and Ghana, whose debt ratios are as high as ours. Kenya was never classified as a heavily indebted poor country," added Dr. Njoroge. This is almost like, before any major crisis in the markets, there's usually that pundit who goes on national TV or on some financial news TV station and says some outrageous thing like, "I think we're going higher 30%," and then the next day it crashes. This sounds like one of those speeches. Even went as far, dude went as far as saying, "We have no write-offs like Uganda and Ghana, whose debt ratios are as high as ours." Okay, cool. Maybe that's been true historically. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. In this whole statement, the part where I really don't agree with him: "From independence, every single shilling that we owe our creditors has been paid through our own resources." That's a bit of a reach. Does it count as our own resources if it gets to a point where debt is maturing and we decide to borrow more, to restructure the debt by borrowing more debt to pay off maturing debt, and then
Existing
we
debt.
get, yeah, we find, we refinance it for the long term? Basically, you are kicking the can down the road. We have not been paying it on through our own resources. If it was through our own resources, you could have seen at least at some point our debt, the level, our levels of debt falling, but they've been rising ever since, especially in the last, since the current administration came into power about, 9, 8 years ago. They've just been rising. Our debt levels have been rising steadily. So you can never say what we owe our creditors has been paid through our own resources. So you could say, "Hey, we have never defaulted on our debt. Even if we have refinanced our debt, we have never defaulted." But to say that you've paid it through our own resources, I think is a bit of a reach. And also something that Abram brought up about most of our debt being denominated in foreign currency, because of our 7.7 trillion, and this 7.7, by the way, it's just as of June. So we don't know, the current figures, I haven't checked the current figures, but this is as of June when the budget was being released. 3.7 trillion shillings in domestic debt and 4 trillion shillings in external debt. So a bulk of our debt, first of all, is external debt. And the thing about external debt is there are a lot of more factors that are riding on it. Or as in finance, they're usually called hard currency debt. So all this hard currency debt, it's reliant, first of all, on the exchange rate. It's also reliant indirectly on the kind of policies being instituted in the countries that whose currencies we have borrowed in. Maybe if some of our debt is in euros, whatever the ECB does affects the euro, meaning it affects us. So the comparisons you usually see in media, oh, people say, "Oh, our debt level is nearing 70% of GDP," and then someone says, "Look at
Japan,
Japan. They have a
100%.
debt. They have a debt to GDP ratio of over 200%." I said, "We have room. We have fiscal room." You're comparing apples to oranges. Them, they borrow in their local currency. If you're in Japan and you borrow in yen, it means that If worse comes to worse, you can literally print yen and give it to your debtors and you're good, you're settled. But you can't print dollars. We can try to print the shillings. That will also have its own problems, but a bulk of our debt is in foreign currency. We can't print dollars.
Yeah, to add on that, in terms of our debt, if you are speaking on that on June, then the infrastructure bond is just a few weeks ago. So there's more debt to be incurred because if the interest rate is around 12.73%, then they've already added more to our debt burden. So tougher times to come in the future.
Yeah, I think you've really captured it quite well. And of course, to our listeners, when you explain that whole concept, because I really didn't get into it, but why it should be a matter of concern that majority of our debt, that's probably 51 or 50-something percent of our debt being in foreign currency. I mean, the implications are so great. And again, I come back to the same question. What can be done to improve the situation? Do you think there's any light at the end of the tunnel, or should we just say the chicken have come home to roost and we need to lie in our bed because these are the politicians that managed to win in 2013. These are the politicians who managed to win in 2017. They're the ones who had the responsibility, both at the legislative and also at that executive level, the executive arm of government. They had this responsibility of managing our public finance, but they have mismanaged it. I think the debt was like at 16 billion and it's gone four times, if I'm not wrong. Surya Dhan has most of the statistics. Eh? Maybe you can just shed light on that. But if it has quadrupled in a period of 8 years, do you think that we will get out of this mess or it's just bound to get worse?
Well, record is more down this matters. You can go first and then I'll chip in later.
If I may go first.
Yeah.
If I may borrow a book from Cinderella. Do you remember when her grandmother came, the pumpkin? So she was by midnight, she was supposed to go home by midnight. So it's actually a period of time whereby we are dancing in the ballroom, but the clock we're supposed to be home by midnight, but the clock we're looking at has no hands. So it's ticking, but there's no hands, so we can't tell. Just like musical chairs where you don't know when the music will stop. So we actually in that period whereby we may try to get over it in terms of we can lower interest rates, 7, we can go to 6, we can go to 5, we can go to 3. But the moment we reach the lower bound and our inflation targets are seen at the minimum, of course, higher, we'll be getting negative returns in terms of our assets generally for savers. Okay? So where should you hide as an investor or somebody who wants to gain value in this global economy? You have to look for somebody, somewhere where you'll hide, or somebody who will help you hide to that man. Where will you hide? I think that's a topic for another day. But in terms of where to hide currently, I'd say look for alternative investments, whereby not necessarily linked to credit, whereby I'll say cash is trash, don't put your money in the bonds. Currently, given the global perspective, whereby we're in a transition, whereby we don't know this change in the new world order. Are we going to have China as the new superpower or the US still remain? Because if you look back in history, you'll find that we started off with the Netherlands, whereby they started the first stock exchange and all that. Went to the UK, whereby they colonized Africa, then they became the superpower, then moved to US, whereby they became the new superpower in terms of winning the world war. So the rise and fall of superpower, if you look at it back in history. If you go back to previous pre-colonial periods in 1700s, it was China. So we are currently in a period whereby China is currently competing with the US as becoming the next superpower in terms of currency.
So maybe just to clarify, do you think they have potentially weaponized debt as their tool?
Yes, it's a debt trap. If you look at it, it's a debt trap.
Mm.
I'll put it that way. It's a more of a political and let me just put in Kiswahili, if I may put it, in terms of tumejitakia.
We have made our bed and we are going to lie in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't give us like structures like the way IMF and World Bank do, like do this. You want this amount of money, this interest rate, this are the collateral, then yeah, take it. If you go eat it, they won't care. As long as you give them their payments, it's done and dusted. But what I should urge, in case we have political listeners, I'll say they need to really tax the rich currently. It's beyond time. We need to tax the rich to save our country. That's
Yeah.
what I think. It's about time.
Yeah, actually, I like what you pointed out that in terms of lending from China, that they're more cunning than guys like the IMF and the World Bank, because the IMF and World Bank would provide a lot of oversight, and they'll be very strict in terms of their lending provisions and procedures. But China will just be like, "Yo, take this 300 billion. If you guys are going to eat it, that's up to you. If you
Yeah.
guys are not gonna use it for the railway, I mean for this JR, which was it the import export bank of China that lended us? One of those
Exim
banks there.
Bank.
Yeah, I think there was, yeah,
Global
Exim
Bank.
Bank, yeah, the export import bank. I don't think there was much oversight, and I suspect a lot of that cash was squirreled, or if it wasn't eaten up, then I mean, you know the way there's the habit of inflating tenders. Okay, it is still needed money nonetheless. So loans are being taken, but people are not even using the loans for anything. It's just going into guys' pockets. Maybe that was a probability. And China simply won't care. They just want to know when our monthly payments coming in, once you're going to start repaying your debt, you know. And if you don't repay it, just as you pointed out at the beginning, we're going to take the pot. And I mean, it's in line with their strategic goals of recreating the traditional trade route to become a force within this eastern side of the world.
Yeah, the Silk Road.
If you look even at our taxes, capital gains tax, and if you look at income tax in Kenya, I think it's around 30%, but capital gains, 5%. I'm a very happy capitalist.
We're sitting in the same
Yeah.
I read somewhere, I don't remember the exact words, but modern slavery is in form of debt because as much as China might be happy to, to give you whatever kind of money you want, it's like 208 in the US, and then you're looking for a mortgage. They're like, you don't have a job, you're jobless, you have no source of income. Take this mortgage, get this big house.
guys were having three houses.
Yeah, man, or no income. You have no income, but dude, you're living large. The thing about China is if there are many examples. I don't want to get into that. We can probably have an episode just to get into this, but sooner or later, if you don't check on our borrowing, they're going to want assets. They're going to want cash flow generating assets to back these loans. If you're not able to, service the Chinese debt, it comes in conditions because sooner or later you'll hear, oh, they want the port. And that's not very outrageous because it happened, I think, was it Sri Lanka or which country
Yeah, it was Sri
exactly?
Lanka.
They have to give up their port.
The port is is with China for like 99 years,
Dude,
man.
dude. As in, wow, that's you asked something very important, the end game. Okay, for me, or at least traditionally, there are two ways out of debt. But I'll add a third one. That will be my last one. But traditionally, there are two ways out of debt. The first way is growth. You might have growing debt, but if we're able to maybe have leaders who are visionaries and they find a way of, creating value, basically in production, employment, and in every area of the economy. If we're able to have growth, even double-digit growth, that's one way of getting out of debt. But how likely is that to happen, given our history? I'll leave that out there. I don't even say I'm a pessimist as far as the outlook or political outlook is concerned. But that's one way to get out of debt. Growth. The second way is repression. Or okay, let me not put it as repression, flitting out of it. As I said, you can print to pay back your debt, but that act of printing, you might pay your existing debt, but the more you print, the more you debase your currency. But that's more of a last resort kind of thing. When it comes to that, you can't run short of examples. As recent as last the la within the last decade, we've had Zimbabwe, Venezuela did the same thing. The Weimar Republic did the same thing. There are numerous examples that that's the worst thing you can do to get out of debt, print more or inflate out of debt. So that's out of the question. A third one, or one that Rekad mentioned in passing, is just lowering our interest rates. You know what the rest of the world is doing, because everyone is doing it, even the US. There's literally no fiscal discipline. There's no fiscal discipline whatsoever.
Just to add, I don't know if you've seen, but you know, Yellen is calling for, she supports an elimination of the debt ceiling completely in the USA.
Wow. MMT, that's a modern monetary theory. I think it has the most outrageous suggestions out there. I think we should also have an episode just purely on modern monetary theory to just get into it, because it has some very interesting assumptions and suggestions, but for the old school economists, it doesn't settle well, because it's laissez-faire, like accountability whatsoever. You can just spend, as long as the central bank can print money to lend to the government and then the government spends, we can just run deficits to whatever extent. And I think the US dollar has lost around 97% of its value since
1900. Yeah,
since 1900. Now, if the currency, our currency is pegged to, is massively being debased, and also the shilling itself has been depreciating against the dollar, now imagine how much debasement we have suffered as Kenyans. Basically, the debt thing, everyone is doing it. Everyone is going on a debt binge. We're just high on debt. And when this comes home to roost, when the long-term debt cycle busts, it's going to have some repercussions that I don't think anyone is ready for. I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but the Great Depression seems like a worthy comparison when it comes to that, because everyone is getting into debt. Now imagine if one of the superpowers, like the way the US says it's running out of money, and if the debt ceiling is not raised, they might end up defaulting on their debt in the first time since the 1700s, when the founders, you know, in quotes, founders started the country. So this is a global phenomenon. It's not unique to us. So the third way, as I was saying, of getting out of debt is a bust. Everyone just, it's either we have a debt jubilee, it's called a debt jubilee. Everyone just forgives everyone's debt, because the debt we owe is to each other.
A debt we jubilee, can go that way.
Imagine you've lent somebody and you're expecting some interest payments over a period of time. Let's say fixed time X. So your X will be reduced by some multiples. I'm saying no. It's either they prolong it or give up the collateral. Choose one.
Mm-hmm.
But collateral goes down. As a capitalist, I'd say it's very good. Buy all the collateral. Buy.
If we follow maybe the approach that most of the, a majority of Western countries and the developed world has been doing, where as the debt grows, you lower your interest rate. So your cost of servicing the debt, you keep lowering it as the debt grows. First of all, developed nations can get away with it, because the lenders are more patient with them, because they know they have faith in the political system, they have faith in the ability to pay back the money. Basically, they have faith in the economies as a whole. But a country like Kenya, as Rekad had mentioned, now we have stayed at the lower bound for a while, at 7%. Our interest rate stays at 7% for a while. But the main appeal of our debt, or emerging markets and frontier markets, the main appeal of our debt is higher interest rates. So if we lower interest rate just because our debt is rising, at some point foreigners will be like, you know, this is not worth it anymore. They raise their hands. They're like, I don't need to own Kenyan debt if the interest rates are so low. I might as well just own US debt that is giving me negative yield on real terms. By real terms, it means when you adjust for inflation. Because if you look now, our interest rate is 7%. Inflation, it came in at what? Last month's inflation was just released recently. Was it what, 6.7%? I don't want to assume. I think I have it somewhere here. So last month's inflation numbers came in at 6.9%. 6.9%. Our interest rate is at 7%. And I'm certain T bills are 7. I don't remember, but between 7 and 8%, like the 3 month T bill. Let's say that. So even on the 3 month T bill itself, if you adjust for inflation, an inflation of 6.9%, it means you're barely making any interest there on real terms. And our appeal, as I said, our appeal as emerging and frontier markets, it's usually high interest rates. So if they try to go the way of the West and lower interest rates, it'll get to a point foreigners will not want to lend to us. They will not want to buy our debt. And that will also bring some other problems. So the best way, I think the best way to get out of debt is to grow, growth. If you find a way, maybe find leaders who are visionaries and they know how to organize the economy. And I think for us, as much as we are a service economy, it would really help if we put more effort as far as manufacturing is concerned, because manufacturing doesn't only deliver growth, it also delivers employment. So you have a population that is satisfied, that is making more money, they can go out into the economy and purchase more, and at the same time, you're producing more as a country. We need leaders who are proactive, honestly, as far as policies are being set up concerned. Because I don't know, was it a couple of months ago, MPs passed a law that they don't want to source government supplies from local producers because the quality is low. That's the most un-Kenyan thing someone can do. They're saying, hey, we would rather import these goods, inflate the prices and get kickbacks than give Kenyans jobs, give Kenyans opportunities to develop production capacity.
Yeah. I mean, you've captured it well again. We just need leaders who understand what it means to be in that capacity of designing and implementing policy, especially when it comes to the economy. Because I think there are a lot of jokers within parliament. A lot of these guys just go give money, abuse their competitors, then they win the vote, probably on a tribal whatever, but on a tribal card. But when it comes to the real deal of policy, when it comes to the real deal of understanding, I'm a legislator, that's my key role, they don't know what they're doing there, you know. So we have that, we also have that gap at the end of the day. And I mean, such things as manufacturing, yeah, I've had that conversation with many guys. And I mean, it's one of the things that really affects Kenyans at the end of the day, because even Kenyan investors, I mean, people are just going into real estate and such things and overlooking the manufacturing industry and the potential it has, not only for themselves as business people, but also the wider economy.
Yeah, I think this is a conversation we can go on for good. But as time has it, we have come to the end of the episode. And I would like to leave you, as I started off with a quote, we're going to finish off with a quote. This is a proverb. For those Christians out there, you know what that means. Promises make debt, and debt makes promises. So when you see your politicians out there on the political trail making promises, those promises, they turn into debt. And a few years from now, when you see it showing up on your unga prizes, don't be surprised.
Yeah.
You're the one who signed up for that. Other than that, thank you for joining us on this episode. We try to release episode on a more consistent basis, but we thank you for setting aside time to come join us in this conversation. You can reach out to us on our social media at the Market Meter Podcast. We're always open and ready to engage. Other than that, have a fruitful week.
Thanks. Have a great week, guys.